Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Richie Neal, we were talking, you and I, about the way in which we come up with our tax bill. And we were talking about the difference between Republicans and Democrats and the way they do it. You talked about cutting taxes is a Republican theology, and I asked you if they really believed it, and you said, you know, no, they really do believe it, that it'll help. But can't they look at the results? In the Clinton administration, we were actually making headway. We were getting rid of the debt, and then come the tax cuts, and now look at where we are.
Well, I was one of the people that participated fully in those tax cut discussions in 2001 and 2003. I was invited to the White House by President Bush shortly after he took the oath. And as you know, I've been very active during the Clinton administration on tax matters and trade matters and Social Security and Medicare. But President Bush invited myself and a handful of others to the White House, to the Oval Office, to discuss his proposed tax cuts in 2001. Vice President Cheney was there, and at the time, the Secretary of the Treasury, Paul O'Neill, was there. And the president laid out his plan to cut taxes by $1.3 trillion in 2001, and he asked me what I thought. And ever so diplomatically and respectfully, when we were in the Oval Office, I said to him that I thought that given the fact that we were looking at a projected surplus of almost $5 trillion during the Clinton years, the last 4 years of the Clinton administration, when we balanced the budget for four successive years, I laid out the following. I said, Mr. President, why don't we continue to pay down the debt? The deficits were gone, and we were making great headway in paying down the debt. In fact, Alan Greenspan warned, if you recall, that we were paying down the debt too quickly. And that clock in Times Square that had chronicled the deficits had actually been turned off. And I remember saying to the president at the time, Mr. President, if we're talking about the amount of money that we have available, why don't we try the following? Why don't we do modest tax cuts for middle-class Americans, shore up Social Security and Medicare with the remainder of the money, and then continue to pay down the debt? Because that's how much money there was, Alan. That's what's astounding, how much money there actually was on January 19th of 2001. And the president at the time, he kind of rejected the argument that I made. The vice president, who had been in the House with me at one time, he rejected the argument. And it was clear to me they were going forward with this huge tax cut, which overwhelmingly really was skewed to the people at the very top. And recall that the rate when Clinton left was 39.6 for the top earners. And then President Bush reduced that to 35% for top earners. The interesting part about it is that it was the slowest economic growth that America's had since the Hoover administration, with lower tax rates.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you that. I mean, you may say it's a theology that if you cut rates, we'll do better, we'll prosper more. But in fact, you know, anybody who takes a careful look at this is going to know that it just isn't so, right?
Well, I agree with that. I think that there are times when you can have tax cuts, and there are other times when you're better off to pay down the debt. And if you recall, then the administration of President Bush Jr., they came back in 2003 and offered another $1 trillion worth of tax cuts. So we cut taxes by $2.3 trillion through those 8 years, and then 2 years into the Obama administration. And you should know that I opposed the tax cuts in 2001 and 2003. And to demonstrate some bipartisanship, I voted against the Obama proposal to extend those tax cuts for two more years. And it, again, I think that it's based upon fact that the economy performed better when we were paying down the debt during the Clinton years, even though the rates were higher.
There is a reality here. I guess this is what I keep trying to get to you with. There's a reality here. They claim theologically that they're right, but the evidence doesn't show that they're right. But I guess nobody likes to pay taxes if they can avoid it, and it becomes a very sort of seductive message, right?
Well, you raise a good point, and I'm going to tell you why. We do carp about taxes in America. It's part of our history. And recall that the American Revolution, in some measure, was based upon the idea that you had a nation 3,000 miles away imposing taxes on tea and taxing other items with the coercive acts in the colonies that led to the American Revolution. But having said that, you also need a prescribed number of dollars to administer the federal government. Let me give you a statistic, and this is not an opinion. This is a fact.
Okay.
revenue now as a percent of gross domestic product is at about a little over 15%. That means that about 15 cents on your federal tax dollar is going to support the federal government. Domestic spending is at record lows. And what's astounding about this argument, which I think has been underreported, is that we have argued in Washington for the better part of the post-World War II years as to whether or not revenue ought to be at 19% or 20%, meaning simply 19 cents on the tax dollar or 20 cents on the tax dollar. So revenue, because of those tax cuts, for 10 years with two wars and borrowing costs, even though borrowing costs are at record lows, the truth is that revenue is now at a substantially reduced rate while we're still trying to pare back the cost of Iraq and Afghanistan and a number of other issues, including 1.9 million new veterans and 45,000 young men and women who have served us honorably but who have been wounded in Iraq and Afghanistan. So we have these attending costs, but we were, over my objections, cutting revenue to pay for those attending costs, and the borrowing has now been substituted for what would have normally been a revenue projection of about 19.5 cents on the tax dollar coming to the federal government. That is not an unreasonable position.
So what's to be done?
Well, I think that one of the things that you're going to see in the debate on tax reform is that you're going to see on our side an insistence on a revenue forecast. And in the House, my sense is that given the majority's position, they are going to reject the idea of revenue. Then if you ever do get the tax reform, which is not by any means a certainty, they'll depend upon the Senate to provide some revenue forecasts and then try to reconcile differences maybe at the mid to end of next year if this plays out, and to find some sort of a compromise therein. It's hard, based upon the facts of this matter, to argue at the moment that American domestic spending is going up, because it simply is not. It's at a very low ebb, and I think that that needs to be pointed out. You can see the changes that are going to be coming via the Defense Department. You can see that revenue right now is up. Fannie and Freddie are really paying down a lot of the debt that they have, but also they're also helping to pay down the national debt. And I think that a grown-up conversation here about revenue and cuts is eventually where this is going to play out. But the economy is so fragile right now, I think that we need to approach this in a very moderate form.
Now, what is their incentive as the majority of the Republicans to reach consensus?
Well, if you want to fund their priorities, you're going to need revenue to do it. And I say to my Democratic friends on our side, if you want to fund many of the priorities that we believe strongly in, we can't defend every single program, effective or ineffective, that comes along. And I think that we need to focus on some of the basic issues that we believe quite strongly in, up on principle.
Like?
Well, I mean, I think making sure that the American people have enough to eat, that's a very basic issue. I think making sure that the American people have shelter, that's a very basic issue. And notwithstanding the idea that national defense is a very important consideration, because providing for the security of our people is the most important responsibility of government. So I think that there ought to be, as I've noted a moment ago, kind of an adult conversation, rather than this notion that became very popular in the mid-80s called supply-side economics, which put us on the path to the acceptance of large deficits. And it was only Clinton, Rubin and Greenspan, who projected that by cutting down the size of the deficits and going to a balanced budget at the time, that we could, in fact, fund many of the initiatives that we support as Democrats.
Richie Neal, a wonderful conversation, as always. It's complicated, obviously, for a lot of us. And what I love about you is that you're able to break it all down for us and make us understand and help us to understand this. When we come back the next time, I want to talk to you about the big S, the sequester, okay?
Happy to.